the most adored athlete, Muhammad Ali. Though Ali won the gold medal at the Rome Olympics in 1960, at the time the experts didn't think much of his boxing skills. His head, eyes wide, seemed to float above the action. Rather than slip a punch, the traditional defensive move, it was his habit to sway back, bending at the waist, a tactic that appalled the experts. Lunacy. Nor did they approve of his personal behavior, the self-promotions, his affiliation with the Muslims, and giving up his slave name for Muhammad Ali. At the press conferences, the reporters were sullen. Ali would turn on them. "Why aren't you taking notice?" or "Why aren't you laughing?" The public as well had a hard time accepting him. Then, 3 years after Ali defended the championship, there came the public vilification for his refusal to join the army during the Vietnam War. The government prosecuted him for draft dodging, and the Boxing Commission took away his license. He was idle for 3.5 years at the peak of his career. In 1971, the Supreme Court ruled that the government had acted improperly, but Ali bore the commission no ill will. There were no lawsuits to get his title back through the courts. No need, he said, to punish them for doing what they thought was right. Quite properly, in his mind, he won back the title in the ring, knocking out George Foreman in the 8th round of their fight in Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle. Ali was asked on a television show what he would have done with his life, given a choice. After an awkward pause, a rare thing indeed, he admitted he couldn't think of anything other than boxing. That is all he had ever wanted or wished for. He couldn't imagine anything else. He defended boxing as a sport. You don't have to be hit in boxing. People don't understand that. Oscar Wilde once suggested that you kill the thing you love. In Ali's case, it was the reverse. What he loved, in a sense, killed him. The man who was the most loquacious of athletes now says almost nothing. He moves slowly through the crowds and signs autographs. He has probably signed more autographs than any other athlete ever, living or dead. It is his principal activity at home, working at his desk. He was once denied an autograph by his idol, Sugar Ray Robinson, and vowed he would never turn anyone down. The ceremonial leave-taking of great athletes can impart indelible memories, even if one remembers them from the scratchy newsreels of the time. Babe Ruth with the doffed cap at home plate. Lou Gehrig's voice echoing in the vast hollows of Yankee Stadium. Muhammad Ali's was not exactly a leave-taking, but it may have seemed so to the estimated 3 billion or so television viewers who saw him open the Atlanta Olympics in 1996. Outfitted in a white gym suit that eerily made him seem to glisten against a dark night sky, he approached the unlit saucer with his flaming torch, his free arm trembling visibly from the effects of Parkinson's disease. It was a kind of epiphany that those who watched realized how much they missed him and how much he had contributed to the world of sport. Students of boxing will pore over the trio of Ali Frazier fights, which rank among the greatest in fistic history, as one might read three acts of a great drama. They would remember the Ali shuffle, the rope-a-dope, the fact that Ali had brought beauty and grace to the most uncompromising of sports, and they would marvel that through the wonderful excesses of skill and character, he had become the most famous athlete, indeed, the best-known personage in the world.
在线英语听力士，感谢您的收听，请记住我们的网址：www.thingroom.com。